Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Heading for the weekend, Friday edition of the Steve Jones Show. Hang with us for a while. Sean Carey, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Steve on his way into the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai. In the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury and Sunbury Motors Kia. On the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummelsworth. Our Friday Steve Jones Show is always brought to you by Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The beer of the week now through Tuesday. Busch and Busch Light 30-pack cans. $15.99. Great lineup of beverages, snacks, peanuts, the pickle bar. Come on, of course the pickle bar. Rave about that pickle bar here on the show. Everything you need to watch more great basketball tonight and over the weekend. And if you need to get more than one case, you can get one of those dollies, one of those little trucks there, and they'll make sure you're packed and stacked in the car ready to go. From Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. You can get in contact with us anytime. Our email is stevejones@wkok.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle @StevejonesPSU. And we invite you to subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast, available on both the Apple Podcast app, iTunes, and Google Play. And we always have 3 months of shows archived at stevejonesshow.com. So as we get toward the end of next month in the NFL draft, if you want to, take a flip back and, find out how the Nittany Lions did earlier this week, Penn State Pro Day, we have all those interviews for you there. So we're going to come up today with the exact number of basketball games Steve Jones and Dick Girardi have done on the Penn State Sports Network and here on WKOK. Steve and DJ will have a chat later on in the show. Get y'all set for Tuesday night, the semifinals of the NIT in Madison Square Garden. Penn State, Mississippi State, our airtime will be at 9 on Tuesday night here on WKOK. Game before that will be Western Kentucky, the Hilltoppers, and Utah. And the winners of both will advance to the NIT Championship in 6 days. And of course, we don't start the weekend until we get a visit from Kevin Jones, Steve's brother from Connecticut. So we'll get an update on what's happening at Jones Metal today. This is kind of a breaking story. I found this right before we cranked it up on the air here live on WKOK regarding new Philadelphia Eagles defensive end Michael Bennett. He has been indicted by a Harris County grand jury on a felony charge of injury to the elderly. This is according to a TV station out of Houston. The alleged incident took place immediately following the 2017 Super Bowl between the New England Patriots and Atlanta Falcons at NRG Stadium in Houston. And Bennett was there to watch his brother Martellus play. So here's more details from the report. The security personnel at the stadium, including a 66-year-old disabled victim, told Bennett that he had to use a different entrance for field access. Instead, he pushed through them, including the elderly woman who was part of the security team. The charge injury to the elderly includes intentionally and knowingly causing bodily injury to a person 65 years or older. It carries up to a penalty of 10 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. As a result of the indictment, a warrant has been issued for Bennett's arrest. Prosecutors are working with Bennett's counsel regarding his surrender. The Eagles recently acquired Bennett in a trade with the Seahawks. Philadelphia sent wide receiver Marcus Johnson and a 2018 fifth-round pick to Seattle in exchange for Bennett and a 2018 seventh-round pick. So obviously this is a developing story that just broke within the past hour. keep you posted as we get more information on that. Sweet 16 March Madness got rolling last night. How about Loyola Chicago in the tournament for the first time since 1963, and they've made their way to the Elite Eight. 69-68, Loyola, Illinois. Loyola, Chicago over Nevada. Kansas State eliminated Calipari in Kentucky, 61-58. And in the other two games last night, Florida State over Gonzaga, 75-60. And Michigan opened up a can on Texas A&M, 99-72. That game was not even close. So we're going to have more Blue Bloods on the court tonight. You got four more games this evening, two on CBS and two on TBS. First game, 7:07 on CBS, Clemson, Kansas. 7:27 on TBS, West Virginia, Villanova. A game being played in Boston. And then tonight, maybe around 20 of 10, give or take a minute, Syracuse, Duke. And then the nightcap tonight at around 10 or so, Texas Tech and Purdue. Now, speaking of Purdue, the NCAA has cleared the path for Purdue's Isaac Haas to play tonight. Doesn't mean he will, though. NCAA announced that it had altered the interpretation of a rule to allow Haas, who fractured his elbow in the first round against Cal State Fullerton, to compete with an approved brace and left the decision with Purdue. Head coach Matt Painter still convinced Haas is fit to play. Painter told the media this morning the NCAA's move has not altered the status of the 7'2" center, who earned all Big Ten third-team honors this season, averaged 14.7 points and 5.7 rebounds per game.
Who's this now?
That would be Isaac Haas.
Oh, well, he, you know what? Matt Painter's not committed yet to doing it. And he says, look, there's certain things he can do, and there's certain things he can't do.
Exactly, now, yeah, exactly what he said this morning. He said he needs to show me the basic things in order for him to play again, to get out there.
Look, I mean, here's the biggest key to his injury to me. It is the right elbow and not the left. He's a right-handed player. Now, he has no problem extending and getting his arm up because it's not his shoulder. But there's certain kind of shots that he takes where he needs mobility and flexibility with that elbow. And if he can't make it, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, you know a lot more than I do. That team really has size, but one red flag they've had throughout the season is their ability to rebound.
They're not a good rebounding team.
You would think you have Haas in there that would really decrease their chances of grabbing the boards.
Everybody thinks they're a good rebounding team because they have a 7'2 and a 7'3 guy. In fact, neither one of them is the leading rebounder of the team. Vincent Edwards is. They're not a very good rebounding team for whatever reason. Now, not having him doesn't help. Now, what they like to do is this, Sean. This is what Purdue likes to do. They like to take the first 3 to 5 possessions of the game, and they like to ram the ball down to Haas. So now you're thinking, I got to cover it, I've got to double it. And the idea is that by the time you get to maybe the 6th possession of the game, you don't go there, but they're still thinking you're going to go down there the rest of the half. They do the same thing to start the second half, too. They come right down, and they start the second half, do the same thing. The first 2-3 possessions, they go to him. And believe me, I've seen enough of it in person to tell you where I always love, when it comes to coaching, it's not as complicated as people think it is. I sit there, I can tell you what he's doing. I can tell you right now what Purdue does.
How many teams, though, have you seen over the years that have more than one guy over 7 feet tall and they have a tough time rebounding?
None. Now, he's a good rebounder. Harms is not. Harms is a shot blocker. He's not a very good rebounder. And look, Haas is not the quickest guy out there. Okay, he's just not. And that's always been the issue. That's what's always bothered me about Mike Watkins against Haas. I just feel Mike's played him all wrong all these years. You got to make him do what you do. Mike should be pulling him out and going past him. Mike's quicker than he is. Mike's longer than he is. And guess what? Mike is not taking advantage of it. That's what's always bothered me about Mike's matchups with Isaac Haas, is that I think Mike has more physical gifts. Now, he doesn't have the experience, right? But he kind of gets lured into what... Now, the two-foul thing out at Purdue. I said in the lobby of the hotel to Dick before we went over, I said, you know darn well they're going to give Mike two fouls in 5 minutes. And he got two fouls in 5 minutes. But Mike over the years should have played him better in the last couple of years. He should have played Haas better. You got to make him do, get him into a bad comfort zone, forcing him to do things that you're doing instead of having him dictate to you what he does. Because he's not, he doesn't have foot quickness. But I will say this, he is among the largest human beings I've ever seen in my life up close. I've now watched 3 games of Isaac Haas in the last 5 weeks from a front row seat, and he is the largest human being I currently know of. Man, he is a big dude. Ugh. All right, that's coming up tonight. So we got that going on. Villanova plays tonight. Duke plays tonight. So after upset Central last night, the heavyweights play tonight. Everyone's wondering, well, I mean, can Syracuse beat Duke? Here's the biggest difference with Syracuse tonight compared to other games in the tournament. In other games in the tournament, and Sean, you're about to hear me say something that you say, yes, I've heard you say that many times, but you got to keep repeating it sometimes. What makes certain teams difficult in the tournament once they get in? Style of play. Michigan's offense is not an easy offense to get ready for. It's a little bit different than everybody else's. In a short turnaround, they're a tough team to play. I've said that once. I've said it probably 20 times now on the show. Same thing with the Syracuse zone. Yes, other people play 2-3 zones. But that's all that Syracuse plays, and from day one of practice, that's all they work on, all they work on, all they work on, all they worked on. They use their length to great advantage. They recruit a certain style of player to play it. But here's the big difference that they face tonight that they didn't face in their first 3 games in the tournament. They are playing a conference team. The difference between a conference team and a non-conference team is, how many times has Duke seen Syracuse play the zone? Oh, every year, including this year. Are they used to playing against it? Yes. Do they know where the strengths of it are? Yes. Do they know where the vulnerabilities are? Yes. That's the difference between a conference game and a non-conference game. Duke's played it before. They know what they're facing. They know what they shouldn't be attacking. They know where they need to attack. Syracuse tries to funnel you into areas where it's an uncomfortable shot. Duke's not like that. They're going to get somebody to the foul line. They're going to get somebody in that area. And plus, Duke's a really good 3-point shooting team to shoot over the zone. And Bagley inside is a difference. And Bagley inside is a different presence, because name me something that you don't do well in a zone. What you don't usually do well in a zone is, you're usually not a good rebounding team in a zone. Zones do not help your rebounding. Most zone teams are not good rebounding teams, because you're not putting a body on a body, or else you're desperately trying to find one. And that's where Bagley and Carter come into play. They may get some cleanup stuff inside against that zone, because Syracuse is not a good rebounding team. And Syracuse does not have enough offensive firepower to beat Duke. Syracuse has not cracked 60 points once in this tournament. And what a difference a day makes. Did I say yesterday about Michigan, Texas A&M? I said, look, watch out for Michigan. I said the key matchup would be Simpson on Starks. Starks went 2 for 11. And guess what Michigan looked like this week? They look like a team that played two basketball games last week. What did Michigan look like last week? They looked like a team that hadn't played in 11 days. Now they're into the flow of the tournament. And do I ever, and like the rest of you, I am enjoying the Loyola of Chicago run here. Now, they won the national championship when I was four in 1962.
That was a crazy first half last night. You had Nevada on a 20-2-ish run, and then yep. The end of the half, you have Loyola Chicago on a 20-4 run of their own, and there was one play that I can't get out of my mind. It was just under a minute left in the first half. It was on the same trip down the floor. I counted at least, seven dribble drives finally taking the shot. They just showed such great patience.
Yep, they did. They're playing well. Ironically, Dick and I are approaching our 500th game together. And that's not, it'll happen next season. We're approaching our 500th game together. You realize that? I threw out the number the other night, 478 or something like that, that we've done together. How about that? All right. Well, you know who the opposing coach was in the first game that we did? Porter Moser.
How about that?
He was the Illinois State head coach. How about that one?
That's cool.
That's too funny. Penn State will play Mississippi State late game. It's 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock. Yeah, sure.
8:30. 9. Yeah, whatever.
It'll be 9-ish.
I've never seen Mark Lawrence so concerned on a network airtime before in my whole life. It's like I said, hey, 8:39. Whatever. Hey, we get an extended pregame show. It's fine.
it's going to be 8:30. Yeah, I'm sure. But the game is not going to start till 9:20. because they have to go with what is the announced tip-off time. Well, the announced tip-off time is 9 o'clock. So they've got the... I'm going to sit down with a couple players, do some interviews, throw them in the pregame show, things like that. Look, this is not brain surgery. All right. Brewers Outlet. Okay. Special of the week, now through Tuesday, Busch and Busch Light 30-pack cans, $15.99. Kick back for the weekend and enjoy some hoops. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hubbles Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Saw the TV ratings. The NCAA Wrestling Championships happened to be the 30th rated show on cable for the day, which is good. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of basketball in the top 8, 9, whatever it is, which is fine. You expect that. But it drew 628,000 viewers on cable, according to Nielsen, which is very good. And the NIT game did well. They drew actually 628,000 households. The NIT game drew 633,000 households. How about that? A lot of Penn State fans enjoying Saturday, didn't they? Wow. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket, Imports, Domestics, Microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the special this week, Busch and Busch Light 30-pack cans, $15.99 now through Tuesday. And, of course, the pickle bar is second to none, led by the barrels and the dills. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Ryan Tripp in a few moments, talking about the NCAA Hockey Championship taking place at Allentown. Penn State and Denver open a game coming up tomorrow. Next half hour, Dick Girardi, and then the Sultan of SWAT in the final half hour of the show. I think that's the appropriate way of going, right?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sailing, man. We're sailing.
Yeah. Management said something about sailing out the door. I don't know what that meant.
Well, yeah. We are kind of doing that into the weekend, but yeah. You're yeah. Sailing into the weekend, but to New York.
Yes, leaving Sunday, and Monday's show will be from Manhattan.
Hopefully more than one from there.
Yes.
Hopefully three from there.
Hopefully. There'll be no show Thursday regardless because of the Phillies. Their opening day is coming up. This day in sports history, the Boston Patriots officially announced their name would change to the New England Patriots. 1972, Evel Knievel broke 93 bones after successfully, in parentheses, jumping 35 cars. 1991, the London Monarchs beat the Frankfurt Galaxy 24-11 in the World League of American Football's first game. 1994, Wayne Gretzky of the L.A. Kings scored his 802nd career goal to pass Gordie Howe as the NHL's all-time leading goal scorer. 1995, Jaromir Jagr of the Penguins became the first European player to lead the NHL in scoring. And that is this day in sports history. NCAA Hockey Championships. The road begins for Penn State in Allentown at the PPL Center. They'll take on the defending national champion, Denver. The play-by-play voice of Penn State hockey, Brian Tripp.
Let's get to the Denver part of this. What did you think about the bracket when the bracket was announced as to what they ended up with on both sides of this?
They 3-seed. They're going to play a 2-seed no matter what, and Denver did not because of their losses against unranked teams this year, did not qualify for a number one seed. So it just so happened that's the way it broke down, and that's the team that they're playing. I think it's a tough draw, but every draw this time of year you're going to consider to be a fairly tough draw. I mean, they're all tournament teams. There's only 16 teams. So I think any team that you're going to face is certainly going to have its fair share of tough matchups for you. But the defending national champs to lead it all off, see how that goes.
Yeah, and not only that, though, it's in Allentown. I know, it's not Pagula, but is there some home, I'm not going to say home ice, but home rink advantage?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it sounds like they're going to sell the place almost out, if not completely sell it out here tomorrow. So I think it gives the Penn State at least, look, the one thing you lose of being the number three seed is you don't get to play matchups. So because you don't get the last change. So they lose that from a home ice perspective. But in terms of fans and environment, the place is going to be jumping with Penn State fans. I think that provides them certainly a boost. It's not Pegula, but it's pretty darn close. And this gives fans who haven't had a chance to get to Pegula because it's such a tough ticket, an opportunity to come see Penn State play in a different venue, get them, if they're from the Lehigh Valley or from Philly or from New York and they can't drive to State College, gives them a chance to come up.
What about the matchup now with Denver? What are a couple of areas where you look at and say, okay, they got to win that matchup, but you feel like they're favored in this matchup?
Yeah, I think we spend a lot of time going through the matchups and looking. Number one, Denver has an elite top line, and that's with Troy Terry, who was an Olympian, carried the U.S. World Junior team last year. Henrik Borgstrom, sophomore, 50 points this year, one of the great players in college hockey, and probably very much headed to the NHL sooner rather than later, and the Savages, who have a national championship game. That's a really good top line. They have a great goalie, Tanner Gillette, defenseman that can clamp down on the game. I think Denver's a team that could win a game 1-0, could win a game 3-2, or win it 6-5. They're just built to win any style of game. They're a deep team, returned much of their team from last year. And we could go through, Penn State has to be disciplined because Denver doesn't take many penalties. But the number one key to me, Steve, is Penn State has to dictate the tempo and play its game. If they can enforce its game on Denver, so throw all the other matchups as how do you slow down the top line? What do you do on special teams? Throw those other matchups out the window. If Penn State can dictate the pace of play, play a puck possession game, then that then forces Denver's hand as opposed to trying to win all these little other matchups within the game.
Hamilton is named the Defensive Player of the Year in the Big Ten. What makes him a special defender out there?
I think because he can do a little bit of everything. He's a very productive, offensive-minded defenseman because he can block a ton of shots on the other end, and he's infectious to play with. Guys love him in the locker room. He's always smiling, always enjoying the time that he's spending out there on the ice. So I think he does so many things well, and it adds up to him being a great player.
All right, so now you look at Penn State the last month. Give me two players whose level of play increased, which allowed the team's level of play to increase.
Yeah, I think number one would be Andrew Sturtz. Yeah, just continuing to grow from where he's been all year long, really distributing the puck. The team follows his lead. I know we've talked about that a lot this year. And then number two would be Evan Barrett and Alex Lamone. I'm going to group them together because they play on the same line. They've been winning battles all year. They've been pretty good 200-feet game all year. They're producing points, and getting points from those guys as well has been a big, big plus for Penn State.
One of the problems in beating Notre Dame is that the goaltender is outstanding. So give me the goaltender matchup in this one between Denver and Penn State.
Well, I think everyone knows Peyton Jones has been so good in postseason hockey during his career. Denver has Tanner Gillette, and he's up for the Mike Richter Award again this year, won the award as the nation's top goalie last year. I think it's a product of how good he is, but it's also a product of players are in front of him. He's not overly big in net. He's very steady, probably not as calm. That's the biggest positive that Cale Morris has going for him. He doesn't waste a lot of movement. He's a good goalie. There's no doubt about it. I would say more experienced, obviously winning a national championship last year. Denver, on paper, has the edge in net, but Peyton Jones has those intangibles where you've seen him play in a big game, especially considering where the crowd is and what it should be here tomorrow, that he hopefully can equal the play of Gillette on the other end.
What would it mean to play with the lead?
Yeah, that'd be huge. This is a team you can't fall behind against, quite simply. Penn State, when playing with the lead, that goes back to my point earlier. That means they're dictating play. They're able to possess the puck. They're playing a Penn State hockey game, winning battles, outracing players to the puck. And when they play with the lead, that usually means they're playing to their identity, which I think is the biggest key of this game. All other matchups aside, it's playing to their identity. And playing to their identity also means playing with the lead.
I'm going to get to the coaching staff now. Guy Gadowski and his assistants. they went through a hot stretch. Then they went through a stretch where they just, you know, no matter what, you know, it may have been close each and every time, but they couldn't win a game. And then they got back on track. What have they meant to all of this, despite whistling in the wind in the background?
They trust, and I know this is a phrase that's been probably overused lately, they trust their process. They know what the team has done to get to this point. They know that they've installed the right system. They know that they have a high character, a good culture in the locker room. They believe in what they've put in. They believe in the foundations of the program, and they believe in the players that they were able to recruit. So they're very confident that what they have is a team that can compete with anyone. And I think when they went up over some ups and downs over the course of the season, they realized that eventually it's going to work out. It's worked out last year, and they had some up and downs, and it's worked out so far this year.
Well, one of the keys to coaching is you don't panic. The fact these are veteran guys around there, how important was that element? Because not every player on this team is a senior. And if your coaches, because you and I both have seen coaches panic before.
Yeah.
And when it happens, it's a problem. So what has it meant that they've had that kind of calm, relaxed leadership that's actually, even in tough times, made the game still enjoyable?
Yeah, I think it's because of the continuity of their staff as well. These guys are so familiar with each other, and they trust the players. They give the players the ability and create the ability to play their own creative game. They give the players the freedom to make decisions on the ice. They don't have such a rigid, structured system where they just trust the guys that they brought in. They trust each other. They're so comfortable with each other. I think that's a big reason why they don't panic, why they are so confident in what they do. I mean, this is a staff that goes back to Princeton. It's the same staff together there, the same staff that's been together at Penn State. So they trust not only what they do in coaching X's and O's, but also how they handle players, how they handle situations that may arise off the ice, how they handle recruiting. So that they have the whole package. I think that allows them, they've been through so many experiences too, that allows them to stay calm no matter what the opportunity is or what happens in a positive or negative fashion that could affect the team.
Well, brilliant work as always, Brian. Look forward to your call tomorrow as Penn State takes on Denver as they try to get to hockey's version of the Elite Eight.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Apologize for the noise in the background.
Oh, no. It's just a happy-go-lucky group, and we like happiness. So.
All right. See ya.
Brian Tripp in Allentown. We will come back with more in a moment. Dick Girardi next half hour, News Radio 1070 WKOK. How about that touch of sportsmanship last night by Kentucky, huh? Kansas State won, they walked off the court. I have not felt this way about something like this since the late 90s. Tennessee women's basketball. Obviously, Pat Summitt's been saluted and feted and all sorts of. But her team and her turned in one of those moments of sportsmanship, which I called out when it happened, and I'm going to say the same thing about Kentucky. Tennessee had won three consecutive national championships, three in a row. So they've won like 20 NCAA tournament games in a row. And then they lost in the Sweet 16. Turned around, walked off the court. I'm watching this thing. What are you doing? So it was okay for the other 20 teams to wait for you and to shake your hands in what is the bitterest of defeats you're going to have. It's an NCAA tournament game. Your season is now over. And the other 20 programs all stopped and shook your hand. You finally stand in the same spot they're standing in, and you leave. Kentucky. Let's get to that.
They did the same thing last night. Yeah, Kansas State celebrating. They should celebrate. What a monumental moment. Those kids may have hoped along the way they'd make the Elite Eight at some point this year, but let's face it, what was the confidence level of doing that? But they did it. And Kentucky turned around and left. John Calipari said, well, they were out there celebrating. What? I'm sorry, John, but you wait. You have to wait. That's the way it goes. Think of all those games Kentucky won this year. Some emotional wins among the... Kentucky won 25, 26 games this year? And over the years, maybe there aren't a lot of veterans on the Kentucky team, but some of them played multiple years. They've won a lot of games. And every single time, guess what the opponent did? They waited, and they shook Kentucky's hand. They walked out. So I was looking at it, and one of the players said, geez, one of the guys I really wanted to shake hands with was John Calipari. He wasn't there. Okay. Sorry, not right. We remember how everybody got on the women's hockey player from Canada for not wearing her silver medal. Now, eventually she put it back on, but you know what? She went through the handshake line. She shook the hand of every American player in that line, every single one of them. She did not leave the ice. She did not go back to the locker room. She stayed out there and shook hands with the American players. Now, did she want to wear her silver medal? No, because you don't win a silver medal. There's no such thing as winning a silver medal. In fact, you know, what is one thing, one absolute thing that every silver medalist has in common? They all lost. Every one of them. Okay? Every silver medalist has lost. They didn't win. The gold medalist won. And she wasn't happy about getting a silver medal. I don't blame her in the least. But did she leave? No. Did she get criticized? Yes. Well, Kentucky left. I don't know. I just don't get it. It's okay for everybody else to hang around after you win, but it's not okay for you to hang around when they win? What kind of standard is that? It's not a standard. I said the same thing about the Tennessee women's basketball team in the late 90s when they lost. They turned around and left. I'm like, I'm watching it on TV. I only watched like the last 2 minutes of the game. I'm watching it on TV. I'm thinking, what are you doing? What do you mean you're leaving? Stand there, wait, and then congratulate them, because guess what? The other 20 teams you vanquished in 3 years all did the same thing. Well, now it's your turn. Just a thought. Just a thought. You know, they were out there, the excuse was they were out there celebrating. Well, they weren't going to celebrate for 2 hours. They're going to probably celebrate for about 30 to 60 seconds and then move on. So that was yesterday's mini issue, and it's a mini issue, but still, one I wanted to at least bring up. Villanova will play tonight in Boston. And Nova plays West Virginia tonight. That should be a really good game tonight. In fact, you've got heavyweights tonight. You got Kansas playing out there tonight. You got Duke Syracuse tonight. You got Villanova playing West Virginia tonight. Purdue, Texas Tech. You have heavyweights tonight. But the part about Syracuse and the zone, Duke's played the zone. They play it every year. So they played against it. They know what they're dealing with.
But will that be a 25-point blowout like Michigan, Texas A&M last night?
Well, I thought that might happen because I told you Simpson might lock down Sparks. Or Starks, I mean TJ Starks. And essentially he did. And then, see, Michigan looks like a team now that's played in a normal rhythm. And it's look, it's not easy when you've been off for 11 days. It's okay to have a few days off, but not 11. And Michigan played like a team that had 11 days off. When Penn State opened the NIT against Temple, they played like a team that had been off for 11 days. Next half hour, Dick Girardi. We'll talk about Penn State basketball and the NIT's version of the Final Four. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.